Lions fans. It's time for the podcast you've been waiting for. The show where Kool-Aid runs blue, faces turn red, and rose-colored glasses never go out of style. This is the Detroit Lions Podcast.
Welcome, fellow Lions fans. I'm Dr. Jimmy Liao, University of Michigan Medical School grad, board certified in family medicine. We're only a week away from the NFL draft at this point. We're starting to hone in on who might be available, who we might be targeting. Unfortunately, a lot of these guys have significant injury concerns. So today I'm going to run through a list of a lot of these guys, tell you how concerned we should be for each player. As always, I have no medical inside information on any of these guys. I have no access to the players, their medical records, their imaging. I have no contact with any of the medical personnel, doctors, trainers, etc. If I did have any of that information, I legally and ethically wouldn't be able to talk about it. So I have similar information as the rest of you guys have. So if you guys have any disagreements, any other perspectives to add, feel free to add it to the YouTube comments or my Twitter at Jimmy Liao MD. Last name is L-I-A-O. On this list, I'm going to put guys into tiers of mild concern, moderate concern, or severe concern. Let's start with the severely concerning medical players we have. First guy is Kool-Aid McKinstry, cornerback out of Alabama. We know that Brad Holmes, probably number one on his wish list for this draft, is a cornerback. Kool-Aid had a top 30 visit with us, so the Lions are definitely interested or intrigued. Unfortunately, he has a Jones fracture. He played with it during the season, so it's a stress fracture he played with during his season at Alabama. The Jones fracture is special in that, unlike most fractures, which heal very reliably and very well in about 6 to 8 weeks, the Jones fracture has a poor blood supply. This means it carries extra risk. So I have three main concerns here with Kool-Aid. Number one is there's a risk of a non-union with a Jones fracture. About a 26% risk with no surgery, 4% with surgery. An example of somebody who had a non-union was Kevin Durant in the NBA. When you have a non-union, you end up needing another procedure done with a bone graft or other methods to try to stimulate the bone to heal. The question was, with Kool-Aid, why do you need not get it fixed in January after the season? It takes about 6 to 10 weeks for a Jones fracture to heal radiographically, so he could have been healed up before the draft. Instead, he went to the combine with it, I think with the hopes that he could sneak it through medical, but the smart doctors there did find the Jones fracture and disallowed him from further participation. He ended up working out at his pro day on March the 20th, got surgery about March the 22nd. If there's a non-union, again, he'll need a repeat procedure, and we won't know until after the draft if there's a non-union or not. The draft is only about 4 weeks out from his surgery. There were some earlier reports about a week ago that said he was healing as expected, but that means nothing to me. Healing as expected doesn't mean it's healed, and they're not going to know that until after the draft. The second concern I have is a 10% refracture rate, which is the approximate percentage he'll refracture that foot during his career. A notable example of this was Julio Jones, who had a refracture of a Jones fracture in 2013. It takes about 15 weeks to recover from a refracture, so that would mean likely a large part of the season would be lost if he had a refracture. The third concern with Kool-Aid is there was a strong desire for him to run at the combine and the pro day before getting the surgery. Why was this? My suspicion is that he wanted to put down as fast of a 40 time, as fast of a workout time as possible before he got the surgery, because after surgery, no guarantee he's going to be as fast. Decent chance he could be slower. At best, he's going to be as fast as before the surgery. That Jones fracture unlikely had any detrimental impact on his 40 time. So on March 20th at his pro day, reports were that he ran as low as a 4.47. Well, first of all, as low as means there was an outlier person who recorded him at a 4.47. Maybe this guy had Dan Campbell levels of caffeine intake that day and had a twitchy trigger finger. Maybe most of the guys measuring him had him around a 4 or 5. That's my suspicion. Also, with pro days, you need to add on a little bit of time compared to the combine. So he could be in the mid 4.5s or even possibly a 4.6 range guy. So the speed of him is a red flag, and we don't know if he's going to be as fast after the surgery. Now, why might the Jones fracture surgery actually slow him down? You're putting a straight screw into a slightly curved bone that could just subtly affect the biomechanics of the foot. It could affect his athleticism. And not being able to see him play after the surgery, and you're going to have to draft this guy, give him a contract before ever seeing him play and prove himself after this kind of surgery, that is a major concern for me. So the bottom line with Kool-Aid is a lot of risks there. I would not touch him in the first round. I wouldn't even touch him in the second round. Too much unknown, too much risk there for a guy with limited upside because of his 40 time. He's just not that fast of a guy. The next guy on the list is Johnny Newton. I'm putting him in the severe concern category as well. Defensive tackle out of Illinois. He also had a top 30 visit with the Lions. Johnny Newton had a Jones fracture, just like Kool-Aid, a stress fracture that he played with during the season. But unlike Kool-Aid, he had surgery right after the season in January. This means he had enough time for it to heal before the draft to prove that there was no non-union. And the reports I've seen in the past couple weeks are that it is healed and the non-union risk, which is about 4%, is not existent anymore. So he visited the Lions on April the 13th, just a few days ago. I'm sure that was a big-time medical recheck, needed to confirm radiographically that the bone is healed, maybe even put him through a little bit of a workout to see how he's doing. Good news for him, we're assuming no non-union issue, but there's still always that risk of that 10% refracture risk. This is a big guy putting a lot of pressure, a lot of force on a very small bone of the body that it's fragile and has already been broken before. Also, just like Kool-Aid, he had surgery after the season and we've never seen him play again after the surgery. Is he going to be the same player? We don't know. All right, next guy on the list is Leatu Latu. Severe concern here. Edge rusher from UCLA. He already retired in 2020 due to a neck issue. He retired for 2 years before returning to play last year. Reportedly had cervical fusion surgery. Notable guys who've had similar surgeries are Daniil Hunter, herniated disc, 2020 had the surgery. Peyton Manning had multiple spine surgeries during his career. Leighton Vander Esch came into the league with a neck issue. He just retired this offseason after 6 years. So with a guy who's already retired for 2 years from a chronic neck issue, how long can we expect him to play? How long can we expect him to be motivated to play before starting to consider another retirement? He's already 23 years old going into the season. He's going to be 24 during the season on December 31st. This is a sort of a Ziggy Ansah level situation where he's an advanced age player coming in with a chronic medical issue. So the argument you could make is that, what's the big deal? Let's just take him. We'll have him for 4 to 5 years on a very cheap contract. He'll be a great edge rusher for us. That's good enough for a first-round pick. Well, I don't think it's that simple. First of all, you have to decide on him after the third year, whether you're going to take on that fifth-year option and whether you're going to consider extending him. So after that third year, if Latu's been playing well, now we're in a bind. What if Leatu Latu says, I want an extension now, and I'm not going to be happy unless you give me an extension? What if he decides to hold out, or these days it's a hold in? Causes some tension there, causes some unhappiness, maybe affects his play, and that's just a headache that a GM's going to have to deal with after the third year. Let's say Brad Holmes is going in with the idea, I am not giving him a second contract because of this neck issue. Now he has to deal with fourth year, maybe the fifth year of this guy, contract issues, unhappiness, dissatisfaction. It's just a headache that you're basically locking yourself into if you draft this guy. Now, let's say you decide to give him that extension, a big money extension. What if he retires 1 or 2 years into that extension after getting that big money? Again, this is a guy who's already retired for 2 years. Now you have a Calvin Johnson type situation. Are you going to try to get a clawback of the signing bonus, which I don't think you're going to be able to do if this is a medical issue that he's retiring from? You could also possibly have a DeAndre Levy issue. He signs a big contract, then we hardly ever see him play again. So major concerns here with a guy with a significant neck issue who already retired. All right, my next tier of guys is the moderate concern list. Jackson Powers Johnson, Oregon offensive guard / center. Rumored medical issue, but just rumors. We don't really have any good details about him. He had a supposed hamstring at the Senior Bowl and left. Now, was this truly just a hamstring, which maybe isn't that big of a deal? Or was this a cover for more of a chronic issue, like a chronic knee issue? He did not run at the combine, which is also another red flag. He did jump, though, so he jumped 8'8" with a broad jump. Next guy with concerns of moderate level are Cooper DeJean, cornerback of Iowa. He had a fibula fracture in practice in November, did not work out at the combine. What's the deal with the fibula fracture? If it's just an isolated fibula fracture, not a big deal. However, if it's associated with a severe high ankle sprain that caused the fibula fracture, like with James Houston or with Graham Glasgow earlier in his career, then that's a much bigger deal, especially a cornerback who needs all his athleticism. So Cooper did not run at the combine, but he did run at his pro day, ran the 40 at about 4.45, vertical jump 38.5, broad jump 10'4". So again, this is a guy who we have not seen play since his fracture. So you're drafting him, giving him a contract without having seen him play after an injury. So that's a concern. The next guy on the moderate concern list is Ennis Rakestraw, cornerback, Missouri. He had a top 30 visit with the Lions. He tore his ACL in 2021. ACL by itself, not a big deal, and he's played since the ACL, so that's reassuring. ACL, if there's any cartilage damage associated with this, is a more long-term concern. Ennis also has had groin issues for the past year. He missed 4 games last year with a groin issue. He missed the Senior Bowl with it. He also hurt his groin again at the combine. In December 2023, he had core muscle surgery, which is in that groin area, so that was his issue. It's uncertain if he's had core muscle surgery on both sides or not, but frequently guys who have core muscle injuries on one side have it on the other side as well. Ennis ran his pro day 40-yard dash at 4.4, so pretty fast, but again, this is a guy who's had surgery since the last time we saw him play. Is he going to be the same player afterwards? That's a concern. Next guy on the moderate concern list is Amarius Mims, big offensive tackle. Hurt his hamstring at the combine. Now, Jeff Risden in his previous podcast wanted to get into a discussion about soft tissue injuries. Are they concerning long term? Are they recurrent? Well, I think it's a case by case basis. If a guy is getting hamstring strains, calf strains because he's overweight, he's fat, lazy, and trying to do a bunch of catch-up rehab, make up for lost time, which is causing a strain, well, then that is a potential long-term concern because that's a character and work ethic concern. If a guy is pulling hamstrings because he's a fast, twitchy guy, like, say, a Jameson Williams who pulled a hamstring earlier this year, we don't know how long that lasted since he got suspended for the first 4 games of the season, but the hamstring didn't bother him the rest of the year. Jahmyr Gibbs also had a hamstring strain that knocked him out for a couple games this past year. Going back 3 years, Darius Slay had a bunch of hamstring issues with us during his last year with us. That was a concern because he was 30 years old with hamstring issues. Was he going to be a reliability risk going forward? But since then with the Eagles, he's been pretty reliable. It's really a case-by-case basis with a lot of these soft tissue injuries, in my opinion. So back to Amarius Mims, he's had a history of also multiple ankle injuries, including a high ankle sprain with tightrope surgery. So this guy, is he potentially just too big for his body? Is he potentially overweight? Maybe a work ethic issue? I don't have any of those details. I don't know. But that's something that Brad Holmes and the doctors are going to have to really delve into. Next on the tiers is the mild concern list. Zach Zinter, Michigan offensive guard. This guy could be in play in the first round. He had a tib-fib fracture. That's one of the most gruesome injuries you can see on the football field. That tibia and fibula causes that lower leg to completely bend in the wrong way. However, it's actually not that bad of an injury long term. Tibias, fibulas heal very well, very reliably, and pretty much back to 100%. As long as the joints are spared, the knee joint and the ankle joint, there's not really a long-term concern there. And with Zach Zinter, the reports are that the ankle and knee were spared. Next on the mild concern list is Zach Frazier, offensive guard from West Virginia. He had a fibula fracture. No details beyond that. If it's isolated fibula fracture, not a big deal. If it's a high ankle sprain, a severe one that caused a fibula fracture, more of a deal. However, with the offensive guard, a high ankle sprain for me is less of a concern than, say, with a cornerback or a more athletically demanding position. Next on the mild concern list is Nate Wiggins, another cornerback. He had a hip flexor strain at the combine. This is not a big deal to me. I'm not too concerned about this going forward long term. We did see one of our players have a hip flexor strain cause him to miss half a season in the past. That was Kenny Golladay in our last season with him. I suspect he had a hip flexor strain. It cost him about half the year. Maybe there were contract-related issues going along with that as well. But he's been never the same since then. So who knows with Kenny Golladay, but I'm not expecting a hip flexor strain to be a long-term issue for Nate Wiggins. There's the injury recap for the NFL draft possibilities. Enjoy the draft. Looking forward to it. Keep a lot of these injuries in mind as you watch guys slip in the draft or as you see the Lions pass on players you think we should draft. They have much more details about the medical issues for these guys than we do. They have all the imaging. They have all the reports. And there are sometimes things that we just do not know going into the draft. All right, enjoy the draft, everyone. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening.
Let's bring it in here together. Let's go. Let's go.
Come on, baby.
Lions on three. One, two, three.
Lions!
You've had enough of that shit.